Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 140, recorded Monday, April 30th, 2018. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: travel tech gets physical, and you will pay attention to the safety briefing. So coming to you from the Hyatt Place Buckhead in Atlanta, Georgia, got the mobile unit out. I am, unfortunately, I'm missing what I think is now going to be a kind of the long-delayed start of spring that's finally showing up in the Midwest. So while I'm here in Atlanta, I think it broke 80 degrees in Chicago and at O'Hare today. I got to tell you, I've done what could only be described as damn little travel since the last episode. A couple of drives up to a client north of Milwaukee, a quick trip to Minneapolis last week, and then the flight this morning down to Atlanta. I managed to avoid the foot of late April snow in Minnesota, but got caught by 3 to 4 inches in Milwaukee. Luckily, I'd looked at the forecast before I left, and walking out to the garage, I grabbed my L.L. Bean boots out of the closet, threw them into the trunk of the car, which saved my dress shoes later that evening and also the next morning when unshoveled walks, I had to make my way to the car. And that is a good thing about driving. I didn't have to worry about space constraints. I tell you, I could not have done the same thing if I was flying to Minneapolis. Ended up flying actually southwest to Minneapolis because A, they were the cheapest flight out on a Monday morning at short notice, and then B, it actually let me finish up my A-list challenge that Southwest had emailed me at the beginning of the year, fly 3 round trips by the end of April and get A-list for the rest of the year. Now, I don't fly Southwest a whole lot, so I can't completely justify the reason that I pushed to finish the challenge. Except, just because it was a challenge, I guess, that, and it'll make it easier for those times that I end up on Southwest this year. I won't have to pay the $12 for auto check-in or set an alarm to check in exactly 24 hours before flight time, both of which typically only get me in the second or the B boarding group. So A-list is, it's not an earth-shattering perk, but I got to tell you, anything that reduces travel hassles is a good thing. When I went to Chicago Midway Airport last Monday to catch that Southwest flight up to Minneapolis, I ran into a new TSA trick: funnel everyone through a single file U-turn line to be sniffed by a TSA agent and a dog. Actually, the dog did the sniffing, not the TSA agent. And then after which, people then split and headed into either the regular security or the TSA pre-check line, which at 7 a.m. on a Monday morning, rush hour, quickly pushed the security line back into the hallway toward the parking garage. So after spending, about just short of $200 million a year the past couple of years on screening technology, like those snazzy sort of full-body scanners that people now empty their pockets for and line up, the TSA is now having us line up for yet another new screening technology. But at least this technology is cute. And really, when was the last time you heard someone, heard a traveler wanting to pet the body scanner? So following up, a couple of things for those not following my Twitter or Travel Commons Facebook page, and shame on you. First, for those Amazon fans, Alexa will now play the latest episode of Travel Commons for you if you ask her nicely. I got an Echo spot in a swag bag for a conference back in January. I put it on the standing desk in my home office, and I just started playing around with it. And then after listening to the Wall Street Journal minute briefing as part of my flash briefing, I started to think about how I could get travel commons on it. At first, I thought I was going to have to figure out how to build an Alexa skill, but then actually digging a bit deeper, I found out that the TuneIn app is sort of, the default podcast player for Alexa. So after I got Travel Commons approved for TuneIn, and actually it felt like they had an actual human go and check out my application, then Travel Commons appeared on my Echo spot. So if you say, Alexa, play Travel Commons podcast, she should play the latest episode for you. Actually, and you can see this in action if you check out either the Travel Commons Facebook page or my Twitter feed for a quick video showing the magic happening. Second, I took advantage of being in town, so not traveling much, and also then the crap weather in April, to do the filming for the much-threatened Midway Taproom Tour layover video. As I mentioned in the last episode, the idea has been to feature an itinerary out of Chicago's other airport, what was Chicago's original airport, that then morphed into the budget airline airport, that then morphed into Southwest's biggest operation, given the day. We used Uber and Lyft to hit four tap rooms in what can only be described as the post-industrial landscape of Chicago's near South Side. We started by driving past the Cook County Prison en route to the Lagunitas plant and tap room that's actually built inside of an old steel mill. Now, while New Belgium and Sierra Nevada landed their national expansions, their East Coast expansions, in the much more sort of bucolic environs of the North Carolina Smoky Mountains, Lagunitas' owner, Tony McGee, dropped his expansion in what can only nicely be put as a dodgy part of Chicago. After that, we then hit some smaller scale, more local places that have been, that have repurposed old manufacturing plants in really what are sort of less visited, less touristy Chicago neighborhoods, Low-Res Brewing in Pilsen, Mars in what can charitably be described as Lower Bridgeport, and then ending up at Weiner Beer in the Back of the Yards neighborhood where the Chicago Stockyards used to be decades ago. So I started working on the production and then looked at the calendar and knew that I only had time for either this episode or the video. And, since I've worked hard on keeping a monthly cadence of podcast episodes, and here we are on the last day of April at night, I've pushed this one all the way to the end. I kicked the video into May. So watch Facebook, Twitter, and the website for the post when I announced that video. Since it's a bit more narrow scope, I probably won't put the video in the podcast feed. Not sure that non-beer drinker listeners will, want some 100 meg video clogging up their internet. But again, watch all the usual channels, and obviously I'll talk about it in the May episode. While sitting in the back seat of one of those Lyft rides, maybe from Bridgeport to Back of the Yards, I noticed something new on the pink Lyft light that many of the Lyft drivers have in the middle of their dash. Now, you always see the front of it, the pink Lyft logo from the outside through the front windshield, but glancing at it, glancing at the back of it from inside the car, I saw something sort of flash by. And looking more closely, I saw a little message scroll by, 15-minute ETA. And then I saw it again in the Lyft car that took me to Minneapolis Airport on last Tuesday. And so I asked the driver about it. He told me that Lyft sent it to him free after he did 300 rides, a bit of a status thing, he said. I told him about the Uber dash light that I had seen in New York. That let me adjust the color of the light from the app. I talked about this in a prior episode. He actually thought that was pretty cool too, but he liked Lyft, the company, better than Uber. And so he liked his new pink light. You know, all sorts of press releases drop in the Travel Commons mailbox, but the one announcing April 24th, last Tuesday, as the first National Business Traveler Day, kind of caught my eye. I guess because it's new, it hasn't made it onto the National Day calendar, which is a list of these sorts of designations. It's a good choice of a date, though, because there's only one National Day, one other National Day listed on the 24th, and that's National Pigs in a Blanket Day, which I can imagine some first and business class flight attendants might reasonably associate with some sleeping business travelers. But National Business Traveler Day was announced, created by Upside Business Travel, the first online travel service built just for the do-it-yourself DIY business traveler, in recognition of, open quote, the most important contributions or the important contributions made by business travelers to America's economy, close quote. You know, I don't know. I could take this just sort of in so many snarky directions with the pigs in a blanket thing just as a starter. I have to say, though, that I felt very unrecognized when I walked into Minneapolis Airport Terminal 2 the afternoon of National Business Travelers Day. I was looking like an obvious frequent business traveler wearing a black blazer, heads down on the iPhone, speed walking to the furthest security checkpoint because that was the only one with pre-check. Nobody gave me a thank you, a flower, a hug, but I don't know. Then again, the first person I had contact with was an old, overweight, but jolly TSA screener. Nice guy, but I'm not sure I would have wanted a hug from him. Oh, and it could have been that the Minneapolis Terminal 2, I don't know. I'm just going to add it to my list of ghetto terminals, the land of misbegotten travelers, which includes O'Hare's Terminal 2, Detroit's North Terminal, Madrid's 4S Satellite Terminal, and the much maligned, for me, Munich T2 Satellite Terminal. I've talked about all of these before. You know, in the fortress hubs like O'Hare, Detroit, Minneapolis, the terminals that the hub airlines use are clean. They're bright. They've got lots of restaurants and shopping choices. Delta's terminal in Detroit has this airy, I don't know, 2 to 3 story ceiling with a monorail train running the length of the terminal up at the top, like on the second or third story, open to everything. The North Terminal, though, that every other airline uses is the old terminal that Delta, or actually it was Northwest at the time, left behind. And they've done, I don't know, maybe a bit of a cleanup and added about 3 restaurants to it. Now, Delta's terminal in Minneapolis, kind of the same story, lots of shops and restaurants, a big craft beer bar, all with a bit of kind of that Minnesota Northwoods feel. Terminal 2, where I was at, like complete generic airport sterility, with prerequisite Subway sandwich joint, a bar where all the handles were removed from the beer taps, and even if you wanted to go look around and go to the cool terminals, there's no inside security connections between these terminals at Minneapolis and Detroit in this example. And it's at least a 10-minute bus ride and another pass through security. I mean, at least at O'Hare, you can walk from Terminal 2 to either the American or the United terminals, hit Rick Bayless's Torta Frontera for great Mexican food, Goose Island for a good beer. I mean, last Tuesday, I was stuck in that Humphrey terminal with a Subway sandwich and a choice of either, I don't know, Bud Light or Blue Moon, which, I don't know, maybe that was fitting for National Business Traveler Day. Hey, and if you've got a travel question, a tip, a story, a comment, the voice of the traveler, send it along the email as always. Comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record, send in an audio comment, which no one has done in a very long time. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is travel tech gets physical. You know, in addition to press releases about National Business Travelers Day, I also get press releases announcing new funding rounds for travel startups. You know, these things, they seem to come in waves, like the wave of companies building tour aggregation platforms. That investment thesis went like this. Because millennials are more into experiential travel, they're more likely to spend money on something like a food tour or hang gliding. The market for travel experiences is fragmented, making discovery and purchasing difficult. Our platform will solve this problem by aggregating experience providers and providing world-class search and user experience on top of that. End of thesis. Now, the latest wave seems to be about building platforms that, quote, reduce the pain, close quote, of corporate business travel. In April, in addition to Upside's National Business Traveler Day announcement, Rocket Trip sent out a press release about their $15 million funding round, and Travel Perk, who sponsored the January episode of Travel Commons, touted their $21 million round, which sounds kind of like some 20-some-odd years later after Travelocity and Expedia hit the market. It sounds like companies continue to spend millions of dollars trying to figure out how to replace travel agents. At times, it feels like much of the work on improving travel is virtual. It's about software, new apps, new search platforms, better ways to spit out a single travel itinerary. But, you know, in spite of that venture capital mantra that software is eating the world, travel is inherently physical. I mean, we want to move our bodies, our stuff, from point A to point B and most often back again. It seems like the 60s were the golden age of this, when Boeing and Airbus's predecessors and the Russians were designing and building, at least the latter two, supersonic planes. I mean, I really felt ancient the other day when I was telling some millennial staffers about how way back when Concorde would fly from JFK to Heathrow in less than 3 hours. Now it seems that Boeing and Airbus are completely focused on cramming more people into subsonic flying buses. Logical, but not very aspirational. Now, you know, if all this work on hyperloops, the test circuits, the design contests, if all this work actually turns into something and isn't just, I don't know, high-tech hobbies for Elon Musk and Richard Branson, we could be onto something again. But in the meantime, in the space between now, you know, thinner, more uncomfortable plane seats and hotel keys that keep demagnetizing, between now and then the inspirational future, us whizzing around in pods at 750 miles an hour doing LA to San Francisco in 35 minutes without having to buy CO2 offsets to make us feel better about ourselves. Between now and then, you know, what are some of the physical things that are about to hit? Well, one of the things, and this is not sexy, but it is handy, one of the things that finally seems to be getting critical mass is real-time luggage tracking through RFID tags. Now, logistics is another thing that's hard, but it feels that airports and some airlines, Delta especially, have slogged through deploying enough RFID readers along the miles of luggage conveyor belts and the bowels of most of the airports they use, and then wiring it back in near real time to their smartphone apps. It feels like it's now, they got enough scale that it's now useful. And I'm hoping that the combination of competitive pressure, falling equipment prices, and government fines will push the rest of the airlines to follow suit. I mean, for me, real-time location tracking was the main use case for smart bags like Blue Smart. And so if I can get this through RFID tags, I got to tell you, I'm going to feel a lot less salty about that smart bag ban. Wearables also get a lot of buzz. Carnival Cruise Lines has been the latest, announcing their Ocean Medallion last year as a way to personalize your cruise experience and, of course, to make it easier to buy drinks on board. You know, it's nothing really new here. I mean, Disney has been doing this forever. I mean, you know, 20 years ago, I remember using a wristband at the North Star Ski Resort in North Tahoe to track how many vertical feet we'd skied in a day and also to easily buy beer in the lodge. Funny how there's a theme here. I'm wondering what happens here if the current noise about the use and misuse of personal data by Facebook and others resets people's privacy versus ease of use balance point rather than just sort of blowing over. I mean, for me, it's less about how the companies use the data, though I'm not completely unconcerned about this, and more about their inability to secure it. Seems like every couple of weeks, another travel company admits, I don't know, to some hack of, say, their point of sale system and the associated loss of millions of names and credit card numbers. That doesn't incent me to let them track my movements and spending habits. Now, also, AR and VR, augmented and virtual reality, those continue to buzz. I've talked about Google Translate's AR feature. Point your camera at, I don't know, say a menu or a washing machine control, and it'll display the translation over the original text in real time. Now, it's not perfect. The translations can rapidly change, sort of flickering between different interpretations, but it's often good enough, and it's a whole lot quicker than banging in each menu entree. Google has tried to extend this real-time translation from visual to speech with their Pixel Bud headphones, and it's turned out to be much more of a version 1.0 experience, very mixed results. I'm probably being way over-optimistic here, but I'll tell you, if those Buds follow the same improvement trajectory, they could be pretty cool in about 3 years' time. Now, it gets real buzzy when we move from AR to VR. Augmented reality to virtual reality. A guy at a VR startup talked to me about using VR in hotel rooms for what he called social viewing. Rather than watching, say, Black Mirror on Netflix on your laptop or one of those Enseo TVs I'm seeing more and more of, you strap on a VR headset, as does your spouse or your kids, and you're all watching together the same Black Mirror episode in a virtual living room or a virtual theater. Okay. And then take that the next step. There's always the pitch. Well, why travel? Why fly over to, say, Madrid to see Picasso's Guernica and the Reina Sofia when you can just strap on this VR headset and be in the room instantly? Hey, you know, I got to tell you, I'm going to go right out on a limb here, but I remember how virtual reality turned out in the Matrix movies. So I think I'm going to keep my travel physical for a while. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is you will pay attention to the safety briefing. The selfies of passengers on Southwest Flight 1380 not wearing their oxygen masks correctly went viral in the days after the engine explosion, along with the stories, the guy telling the woman next to him that she didn't need to squeeze the airbag, and the guy who logged into Wi-Fi and Facebook Live before putting on his mask. The flight attendant interviews that just about every news outlet did just sort of dripped with schadenfreude. No one ever pays attention to the safety videos or demonstrations. Nobody ever pays attention to me, and look what happened. The improvement in airline safety records, I think, has just let people grow numb as to how completely unnatural air travel is, flying over 600 miles an hour at 35,000 feet. Now, Flight 1380 was the first accident-related fatality on a U.S. airliner since 2009 and Southwest's first fatality ever since it was founded in 1971. Now, I'll admit that I don't pay attention to every demo, especially when I do multiple flights in a single week. I do typically look around me for the nearest exits, though, in front, and then I swivel look behind me, because those can change pretty often with different seat configurations, even on the same plane. I will pay attention as a refresher if I haven't flown in a couple of weeks, like last week's flight to Minneapolis. I paid attention to the demo. Or if it's a plane that I haven't flown in a while, I'll look at the seat back card like I did today on the Delta flight down here to Atlanta when I was noticing that I was on a Boeing 717, which is a pretty rare event for me. I have noticed, though, that the flight attendants' requests, demands for attention have become a bit more strident since Flight 1380. And my Southwest flight home from Minneapolis last week, the flight attendant chanted nose and mouth when talking about the oxygen mask. And you got a little bit of nervous laughter coming off the back end of that. The flight attendant on my Delta flight this morning was a bit more direct, perhaps, I don't know, maybe a little fatalistic. "Please pay attention," she said. "We're doing this for you. And if you don't watch us, well, I guess it's your life." Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 140. I hope you all enjoyed the show and hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. You can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, now TuneIn, and Alexa. Go ask Alexa to play Travel Commons for you. Give it a shot. If you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or audio file, comment, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. Ping me on Twitter at mpeacock. Write them on the Travel Commons page on Facebook. Post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who takes the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. And so, again, in May, watch for the announcement for the Midway Tap Tour video. And until then, talk to you soon. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now.